Hello, this is Dominic Betts from the Patents and Practices team at Microsoft. In this video, I'd like to introduce the concepts around semantic logging and introduce you to the semantic logging application block, which will be a brand new application block in the forthcoming release of the Enterprise Library. I'm going to start by explaining a little bit about semantic or structured logging and how it relates to the semantic logging application block, and then walk you through a sample application that illustrates semantic logging in practice. Everybody has to log. In a production environment, you may find that you need logging information when you're debugging and troubleshooting issues with the system. You also need log files, detailed log files, for auditing purposes in many applications. But in practice, dealing with logs can be a bit of a hassle. In a lot of applications, you'll find that the log information that you're dealing with has no real structure, or at least it's inconsistent in the way that the structure has been applied. Very often, there's no documentation or information to help you figure out what's actually in the log files. You have to go in and hunt around and look for things. That's particularly the case if the developers who wrote the application are long gone, and all of the knowledge about how the log files are structured and the format of the messages has gone with them. In some applications, there's a further issue in that you've got a huge volume of files and a huge volume of information to deal with, and maybe the application is actually using multiple different types of log file as well. So, why semantic logging? Well, as I've said, the current logging frameworks that are in widespread use, including the logging application block from Enterprise Library, produce mainly unstructured data. That makes it very hard to consume, and in some cases, where you want to automate processes off the contents of the log, doing that automation can be very, very tricky as well. And that introduces compatibility issues and problems. Looking around, unstructured logging is the predominant approach among .NET developers. That's largely down to the fact that that's the way that a lot of the available technology works. So there are other logging frameworks apart from the logging application block which take a similar approach in there. And it's also the mindset of the .NET developers. That's the way they've always done things, and that's the way that it works. Structured logging, or semantic logging, is a completely different paradigm. And one of the key points that I want to get across to you is that with structured logging, or semantic logging, you're going to change where you put the effort in. And a lot of the effort will go into the design of the logging up front to make it much, much easier to consume log information as and when you need to. So let me give you a little example here of some unstructured logs. The information on the screen here describes what's going on inside a sort algorithm, and there's plenty of information in there to help you figure out what's actually going on. However, the way that those log messages were created doesn't enforce any particular kind of structure. And so understanding how those messages are organized and what the content of those messages is depends very much upon your understanding and knowledge of what's going on inside the application where those log messages are being written. So if you come to troubleshoot an issue or debug something, the first thing you've got to try and figure out is what information is there in the log files and how to parse and understand what that information is. We can contrast that to a structured logging approach. Now here's a screenshot from Windows Event Log, and at first sight we're seeing information that's not terribly different from what we saw on the previous slide. So there's a message there describing what's happened, and there's some other bits and information down at the bottom. However, what we're seeing here is the result of the tool, in this case the Event Viewer in Windows, the results of that tool taking some highly structured data and flattening it just so that you can read it and consume it more easily in the UI. Behind the scenes, if we clicked on the details tab and had a look, see what's going on in there, you can see that what's actually being preserved in the logging infrastructure here is actually highly structured data. So we've got lots of fields in there providing metadata about the log message itself, time created, channels, what computer it was on, information like that. And then we've actually got some structured event data. So you can see that one of the fields in there, the update title, is what was actually used on the general tab. And so the tool itself has taken a particular field, applied a template to construct a friendly human readable version of that message. But the key thing here is that all of that structure is actually preserved so that it makes it much easier for you later on to consume that log information. So, what goes on with logging at the moment? First of all, logging shouldn't just be a check mark. Although in practice that may be the case in many environments. It's something that has to be done. We'll plug in a logging framework of some sort, and then we can tick the box and say that's all been done. With that though, you haven't really thought about how that log information is going to be used in the future. And so when somebody comes to use that log information, they're going to have quite a hard time figuring out what's in there and how to use it effectively. So that implies that logging is, or you should treat logging as a feature that needs to be designed up front. You have to consider in advance how that log data is going to be consumed and agree with the stakeholders, for example, the IT pros who are likely to be the people using that log information, what information it is they require and how it is that they're going to get at that information. The other thing to consider here is that there's a separation of concerns. So when we create the log information within the application, we probably don't know at that point in time exactly how we're going to want to process and deal with that data. However, what we log must be usable however anybody decides they want to use it later on. So what would be great is if we could create the log messages, and then when we come to run the application and decide that we want to process that log data, at that point be able to choose how we want to store that log data, where we want to store that data, how we want to be able to query it, what tools we want to use. And maybe change some of those decisions without having to make any changes in our application. One of the things you'll see in the walkthrough a little bit later on is that by using the semantic logging application block, we're going to have that choice. We're going to put some logging into the sample application that I'll show you, and then I'll show you three different ways that you can collect and process that log data, all of which you can choose between without having to make any changes in the main application itself. So what are the structured logging technologies that you need to know about? Well, the key one is event tracing for Windows. And that's a well-established technology. It's been there in Windows for some time now. And it offers great performance, and there's a huge array of tools around which enable you to manage that logging environment. Probably the reason it hasn't been adopted in the managed world, in the .NET world, is that it's quite hard to publish events from a managed application. Up until now, there have been quite a few hoops you have to jump through, using tools to generate manifests, compiling special resources, all of those types of issue. To address that, in .NET 4.5, there's a brand new event source class, And the idea behind this event source class is that it should make the authoring experience for events that are going to be delivered to event tracing for Windows much, much easier. However, although that class is extensible, out of the box, it only supports ETW. It doesn't support saving log data to databases or your own custom flat file formats, for example. So the semantic logging application block is there to help you begin to use the event source class and begin to think about using event tracing for Windows in your applications. So one of the things that you'll see with the block is that you can use that event source class from the framework without necessarily committing to using ETW. The first two examples I'll show you in the walkthrough will use the event source class as the mechanism for generating log events, but we're going to capture those and store them to either a Windows Azure table or a flat file or a database. We're not going to use any of the ETW logging mechanisms directly. The third example I'll show you will use ETW to process the same messages in there. So using the block should ease your transition to structured logging. You can continue to use the existing log destinations and some of the existing tools that you might be used to for processing and analyzing logs. And at a later date, you can then start considering using some of the event tracing for Windows tooling in place of the things that you're used to at the moment. The other thing the block will provide, and this is not in the CTP but will be in the final release, is some additional tooling support to help you author those events. So, in a nutshell, the semantic logging application block is intended as a stepping stone to help you move from a traditional logging approach to a structured semantic logging approach and towards using event tracing for Windows to do that. So, in the walkthrough, I'm going to show you first of all how to author an event source. That's not particularly difficult. And then we'll use that event source to generate some log messages in our sample application. The first part of the walkthrough will run that in process, so the application will write the events to the destination directly. Second thing I'll show you will do that out of process, so it will have a separate application which is collecting those log messages but saving them to a flat file. And the final part of the walkthrough, we'll be using a tool called PerfView, which allows you to collect the events from the ETW infrastructure in Windows and then write those to an ETL file and analyze the data there. If you decide to download the AXPence application to try this out, there's a couple of things you'll need to do with the solution before you can run it. The solution makes use of a number of other enterprise library blocks, and you can make sure that the packages, the NuGet package for those, are installed. So if I right-click on the solution, manage NuGet packages for the solution, notice that it says that there are some packages missing. If I click on restore, it's going to download those and make sure that all the necessary packages are in there. There is one other thing that you'll need to do. The application, the AXPence application, makes use of a SQL Server database. Now this is not in fact used by the semantic logging application block, but the application will need this database available to run, to store its data and perform a couple of other functions. To build the database, in the downloaded package, you'll find that there's a folder setup database and there's a PowerShell script there, and if you run that, that will build the necessary database for the application to run correctly. So once that's all set up, we're ready to have a look at the semantic logging application block. To show you how to use the semantic logging application block in your own application, I'm going to use a sample application called AExpense, which is a simple expense tracking application. It's a web-based application. You may have seen it before on some of the other patterns and practices projects. So the starting point for using the semantic logging application block is a class that you're going to create in your application, which inherits from the event source class, which is now part of the .NET framework. And if you search on LSDN for the event source class, you'll find all of the relevant documentation for it in there. But I want to show you some of the important features of our implementation of the event source class and explain how that's going to work with the how it's going to relate to the semantic logging application block and how you can use it to generate log messages and events from your own application. Contents of this class consist primarily of a whole bunch of methods, each one of which represents a specific type of event that can be raised from your application. So for example, we've got a simple one here, application starting, another one here, application started. Now in practice, you might have dozens if not hundreds of different log messages, types of log message that could come from your application. So putting them all into a single source file might become a little unmanageable. You might want to think about organizing them into multiple files using partial classes just to make things a little bit easier to manage. The other point to make about these methods and the events that they represent in your application is that the set of events that your application can raise should be decided upon as a result of a dialogue between the developers and the IT pros who are later going to be managing the application. The developers need to let the IT pros know what the events are that the application can generate, and the IT pros will want to have input into the design process to let the developers know what types of events are going to be useful when they later come to troubleshoot and debug the application. Let's have a closer look at what goes on with each of these methods. Inside each of these methods, there is a call to write event, and that's the method that's defined in the event source class. And that's the method that actually sends information to the ETW infrastructure within Windows. And there's a couple of overloads of that which allow you to pass different types of information in. This one here, as well as passing the event ID, is also passing some details of an exception that occurred. Also inside each of these methods, there's typically this clause here. This is just an efficiency. It checks whether or not anybody's actually listening for this event, and if nobody's listening, then we don't bother to write it. So that just improves the performance of the application. The other important thing is that each of these methods is decorated with a whole set of attributes. So we've got the event ID, we've also got things like the level, any keywords that are associated with this message, the task that it's associated with, and an opcode that it's associated with. Now all of the values for these, so for the opcodes, tasks, keywords, if we scroll to the top of this file, we'll see in a set of nested classes that we've got definitions of the different tasks, opcodes, and keywords that we're using in our application. So those have all been defined as part of our custom event source. The other piece of code that we've got in here is the static property log, and we'll see how that gets used a little bit later on when we actually come to raise an event from within the application. Now, a couple of final points about this class just before we move on. One of the most important features about this class is that we now have all of our events defined in a single location within the application. And for each event, so for application starting, we have specified things like the level and the keywords that are associated with that. So all of that information is now put together in a single place. This is a fairly standard .NET class. However, at the moment, there's a couple of things that you need to be careful of. For example, the event there needs to match the event there. But after the CTP release, we plan to include some features, some tools that will help you check these, probably in the form of some StyleCop rules that will analyze the code and make sure that these additional rules are followed in there. The next thing to see is how, once you've defined the events in your event source class, how you can actually cause those events to be written to ETW from within your application. So I'm going to take as my example here the expense repository class, and let's see if we can see whereabouts in here we are writing some events. Now, there's a good example here because we've got commented out what we might have done previously with the logging application block, so we can contrast that with the new approach with the semantic logging application block. So, semantic logging application block approach, there we go, we can see the event source class that we saw just a minute ago, that static property, and then we're invoking the method save expense started, and the only thing that we're doing at that point is passing in the parameter that particular event expects, which is the expense ID. Now, all of the information about what type of an event message that is recorded in the event source class. Now, compare that to what we might have done previously with the logging application block. So we've got logger.write, create a new log entry, and it's at this point here that we would have then specified all of the information like the severity, the event ID, what the message was, categories, and so on and so forth. So the old approach meant that it was somewhat more difficult to be consistent about the way that you wrote log messages, because you might be writing similar log messages from different locations, and you'd need to make sure that you passed in all of the information and defined the payload in exactly the same way. Now it's all done in one location, so whenever I call the save expense started method to raise an event, I know that all of the information is going to be recorded in an absolutely standard structure and format for that message. It also means that if I need to change a message format for some reason, then I've got just one particular place to go and do that, rather than scanning through the code looking for all of the places where I'm creating that particular event message. Now you've seen how to define the various log messages that your application is going to write in an event source class, and how you can then write those log messages from the appropriate points in your application by using the event source class, log, and then the name of the method that represents the event. The next thing to do is to see how we can set about collecting those events and get them into a format so that we can search, analyze, do whatever we need to do with those events. Now, I'm going to show you three different ways of doing this. First of all, we're going to have a look and see how we can process those messages within the AExpense application. Now, the semantic logging application block provides mechanisms for writing those log messages to a number of different destinations, such as flat files, database tables, Windows Azure tables. So we're going to specify in this first example that we want to record those log messages in a Windows Azure table. The second example I'll show you will show how you can collect and process those log messages from a separate process. And this is useful because it offloads some of the logging overhead from the application and lets another process handle that. And the third thing I'll show you is how you can use some of the ETW tools to collect and analyze those messages directly. So, first example is handling them all in process. Now, what we need to do within the AXPense application to cause this to happen is to create an event listener. And if I go to my global ASX file, we should see that when the application starts up, we are creating an Azure table event listener. Now, this is the first class that we've seen which is directly provided by the semantic logging application block. If you remember, the event source is actually part of the .NET framework. Now, this Azure table event listener has a couple of configuration parameters that allow us to specify an identifier for where the messages are coming from. We then, in practice, would have the connection details for your Windows Azure storage account. I'm using local development storage here just for convenience during the walkthrough that I'm doing, and then a name for the table. And in this particular case, there's also a couple of other optional configuration parameters that I could provide, in this case as the buffering interval. Other event listeners, such as a database event listener or a flat file event listener, would have their own different configuration options which are appropriate to getting those working. Once I've defined the listener, I then enable it, and as part of the enabling process, I'm specifying some filters for the AXPense events login here. So I'm interested in collecting all messages verbose and above, and all keywords, but I can filter that and only take critical messages or filter for specific sets of keywords if those were the only things that I wanted to write to that particular event listener. There's nothing, of course, to stop you having multiple event listeners within the application and using different filters on those, so that you can have one log source that collects just the errors and critical, and another log source that collects more detailed information. With that in place, we should be able to see something happening. So if I just switch back to the application for a minute or two, and what we'll do is we'll create a brand new expense. It's timed me out, so I need to log in again. And we'll choose a date. Add that. And add that. So we've now created a new expense item, and we should be able to see evidence of that in the log files that have been generated. So let's go back to Visual Studio. I'm just using the storage browser in Visual Studio to get to that table. So if we choose View Table, and there's actually quite a lot in there. So the most recent ones are at the top. You'll see there were some other ones from earlier on today, but these are the ones which have just occurred just now. So, as well as the timestamp, we've got the event ID that ties directly back to what we had in our event source class. Date, time. Keywords enable us to look up what keywords were associated with that particular event. got the event source name, and the instance name, we've got the level, the opcode, and the tasks. And we're actually making quite good use here of the dynamic schema in Windows Azure Table Storage. So we're creating custom columns for the individual pieces of the payload that were in our event message. So we can see the individual items showing up in custom columns over here. And also, for convenience, we're also showing a representation of the complete payload for all of the parameters for the message, if you wanted to look at those in there as well. So, just to recap where we've got to, we've used the event source to define our event messages. We've written event messages from within our application code. At the moment, we're collecting data in process, so we're using an event listener that's part of the AXpense application, and the event listener that we configured and started was one that used the Windows Azure Table Storage as its destination, and we can see all of the messages and the details from those event messages showing up in Windows Azure Table Storage. So the second way I'm going to show you of capturing events from your application is to do this out of process. Now, the previous example, we created an event listener within the AXpense application. So all of the event capturing and processing was being handled within the AEvent process. This time, we're going to run a separate process that's going to capture and process those events. So the AXpense application will use the event source to raise the event messages. Those will get passed to ETW in Windows, and then we will have a separate process running which will collect those events from the ETW infrastructure, and then we can use the same set of event listeners from that process to persist those event messages to Azure Table Storage, a database, or a flat file. And the example I'm going to show you is using a flat file. Before you can run the out-of-process scenario, you need to download the CTP version of the out-of-process host. I've downloaded this already. It's this zip file here, semanticlogging.svc. And if I unzip that, then you'll see that we've got an executable that will run, and I'll show you how to run that a little bit later on. But before that runs, there are a couple of dependencies that need to be installed. So there's a PowerShell script here which will download and install the necessary dependencies. There are probably a few more dependencies in the CTP version than there will be in the final release version. Once the PowerShell installation is completed of the necessary NuGet packages, the other thing to point out is that the application that we're going to run will be configured using this semantic logging -svc.xml file, and that's where you'll see in the demo we create the event sources and event listeners. Now, when we did things in process, we configured the event source in code within the AXpense application. When we're collecting events out of process, we have an application that we can run that will handle that, and that application is configured by an XML file. So here's an example of a simple version of that XML file for configuring the out-of-process event collector and processor. So within this configuration file, there are some configuration options for fine-tuning the performance. For the most part, the defaults work absolutely fine. We specify the event sources that we're interested in, so there's our AXpense event source, and we can then specify one or more event listeners for that event source. So this out-of-process application could monitor multiple event sources, and for each event source could be using multiple event listeners. And each of those event listeners can have their own configuration settings. So in this particular case, we are using the rolling flat file event listener, and we're interested in logging informational and above messages. So the configuration for the event listener happens down there, and we've got the name of the file specified and a couple of other configuration options that control the specific behavior of that listener. Some of the event listeners, such as the file listeners, do enable you to specify your own custom formatting. We're not using any of those in this particular example, but we could choose to have the events written to the flat file in, for example, XML format or as JSON. So the out-of-process application itself is included as part of the semantic logging application block. It's an executable that we can either run as a simple console application, or we can install it as a Windows service. Now, for this example, I'm going to run it as console application. Oops, that's not going to work. And when I run that, it will read that configuration file, make sure that it's syntactically correct, and then create that event listener for that event source. So we can see some simple diagnostics appearing in there. The other thing to bear in mind about doing things out of process is that you don't need to define any event listeners within the main application. All you need to do is have your event source and call the methods which generate the events. So let's try this out, and we can do that by logging in as John Doe. Oops, logging in as John Doe, and creating a new expense, and that will trigger a whole bunch of messages to be written using the event source. So that should have happened in there. So I'm going to make sure that everything that the rolling flat file event listener has got buffered is flushed. So I'm going to end the process. And then if we go back to Visual Studio, we have that file open. And you can see that all of that information has now been written to that flat file. It's using a default text format. You can also create your own custom formatters, as well as using the XML and JSON formatters, if you want to tweak the contents of these log files. The last example of capturing and processing events from the AXPense application I'm going to show you is going to use some ETW tools directly. So in fact, this example doesn't use anything from the semantic logging application block. We've still got our event source class in AXPense, and we're still invoking those methods that raise the events. But what I'm going to do is use a tool called PerfView, which allows us to capture ETW events and save them to a log file from where we can do any analysis that we want. So to start this tool running, I'm just going to set it to collect. Make sure we're getting the AXPense messages. Just so I don't get too much data, I'm going to not select any of the other options in here, and we'll start that collecting. So if I go back to my expense application, and we'll get John Doe to add another expense. So that should have gone in, that's been added, that's there. And if I now go back to the PerfView tool and stop the collection, it's going to just take a second or two to process all the events that it's logged in there. In a second we'll be able to see the contents of that ETL file that it's created. And if we have a look at the events, then we've got those events coming through from the expense application in there. So this tool here will collect all sorts of other ETW events and allow you to do some sophisticated analysis, filtering and correlating events from different sources. I hope you've learned something from this video about semantic logging and how it's a different approach to logging from what perhaps you're used to, and also that you've seen how the semantic logging application block fits into the story, in particular as a stepping stone or a bridge to help you move from a traditional logging approach to a semantic logging approach and using event tracing for Windows. The CTP version of the block is available from NuGet for you to download and try out in your own applications. And if you do that, please feel free to provide us with any feedback on how you get on with the block. Thanks for watching.